Welcome to this episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring together tech leaders and founders from all across the globe to help us and you grow our businesses. And in this episode, I'm extremely pleased to have our guest, Ram Prasad, and we're going to be talking things about tech like AI. We're going to be talking things about marketing and lead generation of a company, especially in today's climate, and all types of things. So please make sure that you stay right to the very end and take as many notes and insights as you can. So without further ado, Ram, it's an absolute honor to have you here today. Why don't we start off with you introducing yourself and tell us a little bit about your story, how you got started and where you are today.
Sure. Thank you, Gary, for having me on this show. It's an immense pleasure that I'm on this guest. I'm as a guest here today. So my career, my life, I was born in India, but I moved to Africa. I moved to Nigeria, where I spent most of my schooling in a Nigerian school. I learned the local language there. So I know that in addition to my native tongue. My father was a finance executive, and in one of his trips from UK, he brought me a Commodore computer. I really loved playing that. I went back to India for my undergraduate college. I came to the US for my master's at the University of Houston. I then secured a job at a startup where I was the first employee. That's where I got my startup bug. I enjoyed that role. I was responsible for the software engineering. I built the first version of their software, but I did everything. I did marketing. I did lead generation. I installed booths in expos. I did sales. I did finance. I did whatever the company needed to get moving to the next step. And the company grew from this just the two of us to 120. Just before the dot-com crash. But I had got my startup bug. So since then, with the exception of 4 years, I've either worked at a startup, I've had two startups of my own, and now I consult for a variety of startups. I provide fractional CTO services. So that's where I am today.
Fantastic. So, you know, you've got it's the wealth of experience you have, and that's why, you know, I thought this would be you'll be an absolute ideal guest to have for our listeners and our subscribers here, because, you know, we talk about tech, but not just tech itself, but growing tech businesses. And it comes in all shapes and sizes. And as you said, you've had two SaaS startups, you know, you're consulting now to that. So before we move on to this, I want to move back to just you starting off, as I said, when you were in that first SaaS company, and we went from one to 150 employees, was it something like that?
Roughly 120, yes.
About 120. But what was fascinating is like, no one ever talks about it, but it's the multiple hats. It's the multiple hats we have to wear in a startup. And as you said, you did the programming, you did the marketing, you did the financing, you did that. Do you think that was a really good grounding for you when it came to business acumen?
Definitely. It was a live MBA in action. It not only gave me a business acumen, but it exposed me to the intricacies of a startup, growing a business from zero to several million dollars, zero to one stage, the one to 10 stage. So definitely I had to interact. I had to interact with a different type of folks, you know, the accounting folks, the marketing folks. So that I understood the customer's perspective in addition to just building the product. And that is key to my current venture. It's key to the success of startups startup success I've had over the years. It's key to the startup success I see with my clients, the clients who are successful. They have an understanding of customers. So that exposure, the broad exposure, led me to be the face of the company to customers. And that was instrumental in an appreciation of their needs and the focus, you know, customer driving the business in terms of customer demand.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, we're going to talk about this in quite some detail later on, about making sure that a company understands the importance of being in front of the customer. Because if you don't have a customer, it doesn't matter how good your product is, it doesn't matter how good your SaaS is or your service. It's all about getting in front of that customer first. So we'll move on to that. But before we do that, for those who haven't heard of you before or your company, why don't you just give us a brief outline of what is it you do right now? Who is it that you serve predominantly? And what problem are you solving for your clients?
Sure, absolutely. So most tech founders and growing SaaS companies, especially those less than US $50 million, the B2B SaaS, and I worked in several of those, they struggle to innovate, grow, and scale due to lack of access to experienced tech leadership. And that is what, that is the challenge we are trying to address. We are trying to level the playing field, where a startup of that size can have access to experienced tech leadership through our and we can access that through our fractional services without them having to commit to a budget. So that essentially is my market, B2B SaaS companies less than $50 million. They have a lack of leader. There's a leadership oversight, technology leadership missing in their organization that they need that guidance. They are stuck in some kind of a plateau. Maybe they are mismanaging the team. Maybe they have the incorrect product market fit. Maybe they are unable to scale. Maybe they are missing deliveries. So a combination of those kind of problems, and maybe there's frequent employee retention issues, and all of these are indications of a leadership vacuum. And that is the vacuum that we are trying to fulfill, but we fill it at 10 or 20 hours a week, so that they don't have to they're contained within their budget.
Gotcha. So let's talk about those levels, because it's interesting. You've mentioned this a couple of times now, is that companies hit plateaus or hit certain levels. It's not just like in any business, everyone assumes that the business can go from A to Z and it's this consistent growth, but it's never like that, is it? There's always roadblocks there. There's always levels that one hits, the glass ceiling, and it bounces back down again. And you as you said, the some common revenue levels would be 0 to 1 million, million to 5, 5 to 10, and 10 plus. I suppose from your experience, would you say there are different types of issues depending on what stage that you're at? Or would you say leadership issues and growth issues are pretty much similar, irrespective of where you are revenue-wise?
There are broad similarities, but the leadership skills required are definitely different. So to go from 0 to 10, you need product market fit. You need to understand, you need to get your first few customers. So there's a strategy, the strategies around getting, how do you get your first few customers? Hook or crook, you try to get your customers. Maybe it's a friend who you know, maybe some other customer, maybe some colleague you have worked with previously. Through your personal network, you get the first early customers. Then you grow, you grow to a certain point through referrals, and you grow through some kind of, and then you hit some plateau, and that plateau could be 3 to 4 million or even up to 10 million if you're lucky. And maybe you got lucky getting the first enterprise customer, but now you have served that one customer, one or two customers or a small number of customers. And now you have, without applying, and I see this among my customers. I see this among my customers that I worked with. They reach a plateau around, $5 to $10 million in revenue approximately. And what worked to get to that no longer works. So the CEO or the founder hacked their way from a product development perspective. They might have been hands-on or not, but they had a skill to get the product going. They were lucky to get to some extent luck or some extent experience in the domain, got them the first few early customers, but now they are stuck at that plateau. So they have not necessarily built a robust lead generation or marketing framework to grow then to the next level. They have not necessarily built a technology platform that can scale to grow to the next level. So they have hacked their product. So both from a product perspective as well as from a marketing and sales perspective, they may not have built a system. So the leadership skill, the leader, and this is across the organization. It's operation skills, it's finance skills, it's across the organization. I am just more intimately familiar with the product technology and marketing aspect of the organization, but it's across the entire spectrum.
Of course.
So you then need different leadership skills. You need to organize your processes to take you from the next. You need to build a consistent process that can consistently get customers through the door. You need to build outbound marketing, inbound marketing techniques. You need to have a technology architecture that can now scale. So from accepting tens or hundreds of users to now thousands or 10,000s of users, depending on the type of business you're operating. But you need to build a product not just for one or two customers. You need to be more generic and build a platform that is more flexible and modular to adapt to a variety of use cases, or so that customers may use your software in different ways. The earlier customers might be flexible, may have a compelling problem that they don't mind accommodating the way you do it. But as you grow, the other customers have choices and they want it built the right way. So you have to adapt to those kind of needs. So you need skills that recognize that, number one, willing to change and do the necessary work to re-architect from a technology standpoint and build processes around it. You now have a larger team, so you need it. And that's one of the reasons I come on board, is the founder has grown the team from 0 to 10 or 15 engineers. It's outgrown his ability to, of course, he has other tasks to do, but he needs to focus on sales and marketing, but it has outgrown his ability to scale or at least focus on that. So then he needs a fractional leader. I mean, he needs a CTO type of leader to take you to help you grow to the next level. But yeah,
got you. Because we definitely do see, especially with tech, we're in the founding stages of it, up to the million, even up to sort of the 5-10 million, as you say, it's very much founder-led sales, founder-led marketing to a degree that got them to that particular level. And although they're wearing multiple hats, and although they have some team members, it doesn't necessarily allow these founders to scale to the next level. We think we're invincible. We think we can keep on going no matter what. And it is true to a degree, as entrepreneurs, we are that, forward focus, forward passion that drives us. But sooner or later, you are going to hit this level where you say, listen, I can't do everything. I am going to need more people, more experienced people on my team that's going to allow me to concentrate maybe onto the next level, no matter what that level may be. And we'll talk about scaling and founder exiting a little bit later on, because that's obviously a topic close to my heart, being an exit founder myself and like you. So we can talk about that a little bit later on. But let's go back to, like you said earlier, some of these companies are getting very successful very, very quickly. They're moving up the scale ladders from 1 to 5, 10 million. And then they hit this particular plateau. And we were talking, obviously, off camera before, and we were saying that, yes, it could be luck, it could be referrals, it could be partner-led. But once they get to this level with no formal or proven lead generation, sales conversion system in place, they tend to hit this level, this glass ceiling, and wonder why. So let's break that down for people here. So what we mean about lead generation and a sales conversion process. With lead generation, it is what it sounds. It's, listen, you need to generate more leads in. Where is the problem that you are seeing out there, Ram, with tech companies when it comes to the lead generation challenges?
Right. And before I answer that, it just struck me that I didn't mention this earlier, but I have worked in startups 0 to 1 million, 1 to 10, 10 to 100, and 100 to a billion. So I worked with all of these variety of different companies. So I have experience. I have experiences across that. But I think to answer your question, I think, and by the way, to get the skills you need to get from 0 to 10 is, as we said earlier, is different from 10 to 100. So it is not, it's not a fault of founders to push their way without processes, without to 0 to 10. I mean, that's, if they had followed processes, they would be stuck in the processes and not get from, they would be stuck at zero. So they, so it's important to recognize that whatever took them from 0 to 10 or anything in between was the right thing to do to a certain good extent, because it got them there. The key is to now, the key is now to adapt to move to the next level. So number one, the lead generation in particular is, I don't think people get it right. I think they try to, they may hire, I mean, I worked with a variety of marketing companies over the years, and people do it wrong. People do it wrong. So I think so you have to get the right skill sets on board. You have to hire for the right resource. You have to stick to it, because it's not something that happens in 2 or 3 months necessarily. You have to keep at it. You, and you have to complement lead generation with, you know, content marketing. You have to complement with SEO, because people, you have to make, you have to, and as a founder in that stage of business, my perspective is, and the ones that I've seen successful is, a lot of founders who are successful have, the company at that stage is them. And even at less than 10, this customer is, so the CEO specifically has to be out and about. He has to be a thought leader. So he has to communicate here. So then you recognize, I mean, yes, you need to scale. You need to scale beyond yourself. But when you are in the 0 to 10, you need to be a thought leader. You need to express, you need to be on podcasts like this. You need to put content out there. You need to be on videos. You need to communicate to the, you need to be in conference shows speaking about your solution, about your product, how you are the best. So you need to do that in addition to lead generation. Lead generation, of course, is, when I say lead generation, I'm referring to an email marketing system as an example, or a LinkedIn outbound campaign, whatever that may, whatever fame, shape and show, form that takes. But in addition to that, it all go, it's a complete package. The 0 to 10, some, and you quite frankly need that even to go sometimes to 10. But I have seen a lot of customers navigate the 0 to 10 through initial relationships they might have had through prior work experiences, and people trust them and they get to that. But then you have to scale beyond that. So if you see the top CEOs of the country, even large enterprises, the CEO, a lot of CEOs are out publicly, like Microsoft CEO, Google CEO. I mean, that's of course the other extreme, but in terms of scale, but even at the smaller scale, the CEO or some, they need to be out there in the public eye. So people recognize, and that's how you build the brand. And so that's part of the solution.
No, I definitely agree with that. And it's oddly strange that you should mention at this time, because what we're seeing more and more of, and again, these podcasts, the whole aim of this particular podcast is to give insights. You know, thank you very much, Ram, so far for sharing that. And the insights that we're seeing today in this particular point is that although founders are what we were doing, founder-led sales, they're still the face when it comes to closing the deal, being in front of the customer, up to maybe 10, up to maybe 15 million. They're not actually doing enough founder-led marketing. They're not getting out there, like you said, and optimizing their LinkedIn profile, making sure they're out on podcasts, being the authority that's out there, and just assuming they do this cookie cutter marketing that gets them to where they need to get to, and then they'll speak themselves and hopefully close it by then. So you're obviously seeing that out there. What advice would you give people who are saying, well, hold on, my product speaks for itself. I've got this far. Surely there doesn't necessarily need, what do you mean it needs me to be the face of it? How would you answer that?
Well, you wouldn't be, if it works for you, power to you. If what you're doing works for you, power to you. Most founders that I know are in the 0 to 10 are plateaued out if they don't do some kind of, if they are not the face to the company. Because even my own personal experience with my current consulting company, even though I'm not an account executive or an extensive sales experience, I am the best salesperson in my organization. In the startups that I, in my startup, as a founder, I was the best salesperson. I consulted with numerous startups over the last 8 years in my consulting organization. Universally, my observation is the founders in the organizations close the highest deals if they are in a conversation, because they are experts in the product. They know, they understand the customer pain points. So they understand the market more than anybody else. And that's why they founded the company, and that's why they acquired that knowledge or had that knowledge. And so as a founder, you need to leverage that. So the organization has not yet ready in the early stages to scale to where you can make it a cookie cutter process. When you can do it as a cookie cutter process, where anyone, you can hire the best sales executives and you can hand over the solution to them, that's when you can scale beyond yourself. But in the early stages, you are the best salesperson as a founder. So that's my recommendation. There's no
doubt. I love what you just said there, Aram, about, and again, it's one of these things which tend to be oversimplified and therefore missed. And you know what you said there for people who missed it was that in your experience, founder-led sales, they're the guys and the girls who are absolutely closing the highest value deals on average. And it's not that we didn't say you're closing more deals than your others. You're closing the higher value ones because you have a trust factor out there because you're the person that's running this particular company. So that's one thing that missed, which I really picked up on from there. But like you said, they may have got to where they are now, but they will plateau out. And where you can do that is, I can already hear some of the listeners here thinking, well, I don't have time to go out there. How am I meant to get out there and put my face out there and put my name everywhere if I'm doing all the lead generation and doing the sales from that? You mentioned something earlier, Ram, and I'd like to dig a little bit deeper into this because it's something that you and I both recommend to our clients, and that's email marketing. And I think it's one of those lost, undone, misunderstood powerhouses of lead generation for tech companies that companies are just not using. Let's dive a little bit into that. In your experience, how powerful is email marketing and why?
I think that amazingly still works. It's hard to believe because the perception out there is when we get a junk, what we would deem junk, We mark it as junk. We mark it as phishing email. We delete it. We try to unsubscribe. We all do that. But you have to ask yourself the question, how many products have you bought through a cold call or an email? And truth be told, I have bought a dozen or so. I have... probably marked as junk hundreds and thousands of emails. I mean, I don't know the exact number, obviously, but over the years. So I have done that. But in spite of that, I have responded to the number of, I've ignored a bunch of cold calls, but if the timing was right, if the person on the other end of the call or the other end of the email who sent it sent me a compelling message, addressed the problem that I was having today that I needed a solution for, and there was any semblance of possibility that this person might solve the problem I have, I am responding.
And that is the key point. And I'm going to just stop you because I think one of the from my experience with my clients and from insights I'm getting from other tech leaders, where tech companies dismiss the power of email is not because email doesn't work. It's because the message in the email doesn't work. Like you quite rightly said, when you're busy and you're getting rid of emails, but something will come along and that addresses the problem straight away. It gives you a potential solution straight away. Yet most emails that we get, it's like War and Peace. They're long, yes, drawn out emails. They're a branded email. They're more about branding. Hey, we do this and we do that. We do that. And it's not solution led. It's product led or service led. Yeah. Right. If you, like Ram said there, if it comes out, guys, and says, look, are you having problems with XYZ? Do you mind if I show you how to solve it? That's all it needs to be. And email marketing will work in that respect.
You have is exactly what you said. If you have a solution that can solve a specific problem, send it out to the audience that for whom that problem is compelling enough for them to take action, and then let the numbers game play itself out. I mean, it is still a numbers game. However good your message is, not everybody is going to respond, but you have to target it to the right audience. And yeah, I love your other comment. Do not make it lengthy, because the attention span, then it becomes very generic by definition. Then nobody has time to read it. Nobody has time. Yeah. But
And we're all living in busy, busy times. But the beauty about we can talk about emails all the time, all day long. But you know, just for the point that we're trying to make here, there's that email still works. There are tools out there which make it now even more scalable, which means you can get your message out to as many more people than you ever could before for a fraction of what it used to cost 5 years ago. But that way you're out there. If you have an automated system, that's almost like your silent, and I hate to use this word, silent salesperson, because you're not trying to sell on the email. You're just trying to, you know, generate somebody putting their hand up, go, yeah, I want to know more about it. But if you can use the system to save you time, that allows you now as a founder to go out there and do more podcasts, become that authority, get on stages, do speaking, etc., to build that brand, which is what Ram was saying a little bit earlier on.
But I'm all, just to be clear though, I'm also a believer that you have to complement that with other activities, like, you know, like it's not just email. You can't just focus on email. Yeah, but like I think you pointed out, you need to, if you have, you will have the time to do that if that one's set up to be done correctly. So then you can do both, because people are in today's world, people are going to check you out, your website, absolutely, your profile. So you send the message, they respond. It's a compelling problem that they have. Then they're obviously going to check you out further. That's where the other aspects of marketing help you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I love what you're saying about the check you add as well. And one of the most overlooked things I see all the time is LinkedIn banner. You know, the amount of things like people I come across in tech that don't even have a photo on their LinkedIn profile, they let alone a background. They use the standard stock blue and gray that LinkedIn gives you. And that is ideal real estate for you to share what you actually do out there on LinkedIn. But And people seem to think it's just a recruiting exercise, but as Ram, like you just said there, Ram, people are going to check you out. And in a B2B, in tech, they're not going to go to TikTok to check you out. The first thing they're going to do generally is check you out on LinkedIn. So if you're not using LinkedIn properly, you're missing out tremendously on that. So we talked about lead generation. Let's talk about sales conversion, because obviously sales, that there's this myth there that sales and marketing are the same thing, when ultimately they're not. Marketing ultimately is getting people to say, yes, I want a better conversation with you. And sales is converting them and actually bringing money into the bank. What, in your experience out there, Ram, are tech companies getting a challenge with in closing more sales? Is it longer sales cycles? Is it demo after demo after demo and not doing any closing? Is it the lack of a closing sequence? What are the biggest challenges you're seeing tech companies have out there?
Right. The biggest challenge, and I had this personal experience myself, is a product or service focus as opposed to customer problem focus. So if I go on and on about my product being the best, and while that may be true, unlikely to be true, but even assuming that is true, the you have to address the problem of the customer. So you have to listen more. So the high value sales are definitely being sold by the founder for a reason. Even though they might be product or service focused, they understand inherently that's why they're able to sell the higher value items more effectively, because they inherently understand it. So everyone on the team should, if they don't have that knowledge or domain expertise or the ability to understand the customers as the founder, then you need to listen more than you talk. You need, and then focus. You don't have to, if your product has 100 million features, but one of them, you need to get the sale you focus on the one solution that the you need to get started in the right place. So you talk about the solution after you deeply understand the problem. So I think I recently mentor a lot in the Houston startup ecosystem. I mentor startup founders and the startup founders and even growing startup founders. I noticed that pattern. It is how do you market your service? It's a list of features. Even today, even though there's so much of information out there that you need to understand the problem, you need to empathize with the customer. It's starting with the product and the technology. What's even worse than starting with the product is starting with the technology. I have AI incorporated in the solution as an example. So that's even because if the AI has to solve the customer's problem at hand, and if it does, power to you. So that's the biggest observation I've done. And truth be told, I'm talking about this today, but earlier on in my career and my first startup company, that we learned that the hard way. That the first startup company and even subsequent ones, we used to be feature-led, story-led. And as company grew, we recognized the need to pivot to being, and that's where I learned that. It was an MBA in action. I learned that, so the CEO and I, we learned it together, so to speak.
Yes.
We pivoted. We did our best based on the learnings we had to understand the problem first and not talk about our solution at all until we understood their problem.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very good point there. It's like in tech, we tend to think, well, do you know what? This is our baby. This is what we created. We spent years in R&D getting to this space. And yes, of course, you want to be talking about it, but that's not necessarily what the prospect wants to hear. The prospect is bombarded by similar products. Now, you might think that your product is unique, and it probably is unique, but the perception of the market out there is, you are just looking the same and sounding the same like everybody else. And the features are like everybody else, right?
Yeah. I was in a recent networking event for tech service companies. And there was a marketing and sales person. There were half of the crowd was marketing and sales folks. The half of them were tech or service providers. And the common theme from the marketing team, from the marketing folks, was all of these people, this is a tech company, this is an IT 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 company, and I don't know what they're doing differently. They're clubbing everybody as one big, one of them was like, I provide fractional CTO, the other one may provide product development services, another one may provide cybersecurity. So for people familiar with the differences, they're different services entirely. In fact, that group was selected based on no two people being the same service provider. So they obviously all were different, but the networking crowd there did not recognize because everybody was everybody had a 1 minute elevator pitch opportunity, and that was the outcome. They could not distinguish between them.
We all think we're unique until we get out there in the marketplace, and the marketplace goes, you just look the same. You just, everyone same and looks the same. So, Nam, listen, thank you very much so far for everything you've shared with us. I have a loaded question for you. Like, I want to ask all my guests here, if there was one piece of advice you could give your younger self that you now know, what would that piece of advice be?
Be bolder.
Ooh. What do you mean by that? Let's explain that. What do you mean by be bolder?
Go think big. Just even when you start a company, when you work somewhere else, or you start a company, or like in the earlier, just my own example, I started my consulting company in 2016 as a solo entrepreneur. So for several years, I was a solo entrepreneur because I felt that I didn't have time to accommodate more than 3 clients. So I limited myself to 3 clients. Then something happened and I felt I can handle more. I can engage a consultant. So that's a simple example. But it applies in other experiences as well. This is just happens to be the most recent example. But if I was bolder from day one, I just accept challenges. Can I build a company from, I don't have to be limited to zero, from to be stuck at the 0 to 10 range, because yes, that's what I know today. And I brought the company to there, but be bolder, do more lead generation, do more outbound marketing, write more blogs, be on more podcasts. So that's when you reached out, I said, yes. I don't refuse an opportunity now, but be bolder, and you can do it. Say yes, and then figure out how to do it. That's what
I'm doing. That is a brilliant piece of advice. I think more people should take heed from that. And as I said, like you say, Ram, be bolder, never say no, think a lot bigger. Yeah, and success will be in this way. Well, Ram, thank you very much for everything that you shared with us today. If people want to get hold of you, to chat with you, or to find out more about being a CTO, you helping them with their businesses, what's the best place to get hold of you?
I'm extremely active on LinkedIn. I'm bolder now, so I'm extremely active on LinkedIn. I put two or three articles a week out there. Mm-hmm. And so the easiest way to get hold of me is search for Ram Prasad. Delence, that's the name of my company, DELENCE. Just search for me on LinkedIn. You should come across my profile, and you can send me a direct message there. You can also go to my website, of course, DELENCE.com, and there's a contact us button there. Either myself or one of my assistants would then respond to that message. But yeah, those are the two ways you can get hold of me.
Brilliant. Well, I'll make sure I put those links in the show notes below so that people can just click on it straight away and get hold of you. So as I said, Ram, thank you very much. It's been an absolute honor and a pleasure to have you on board, sharing your expertise and your insights with us today. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us on this particular episode. You know, and if you've taken anything from Ram today, if you've taken any insights or notes or little flashes of the obvious and think, wow, I need to utilize that, make sure you do us a favor, make sure you comment, you like, and you share your message with other people. Share this episode with other people that you know so that other people can benefit and grow as well. So all that remains for me to say is thank you very much for joining us. Thank you very much, Ram, for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure. And until next time, both Ram and I, we wish you goodbye. And until the next episode, take care. We'll see you all soon. Bye-bye.